Hey Forensic Tales listeners, I'm always on the hunt for new true crime podcasts. And since we're all staying home a little bit more lately, I've been binging the podcast Sword and Scale. Sword and Scale is the longest standing true crime podcast that combines 911 calls, interrogation audio to tell you real life stories that will chill you to the bone. They recently covered a case that happened right here in my own backyard of Orange County that still gives me the chills. Sword and Scale is available bi-weekly on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe today and leave them a review. That's Sword and Scale, also available at swordandscale.com. Subscribe today and give it a listen. Sword and Scale, proving that the worst monsters are real. According to the Lottery USA, the odds of you or I winning a Mega Millions jackpot is about 1 in 302.6 million. Your chances of getting struck by lightning, 1 in 12,000. In November 2006, assistant truck driver and two-time incarcerated felon became that 1 in 302.6 million statistic. Florida native Abraham Shakespeare used $2 of the $5 he had in his pocket and purchased a winning lottery ticket worth over $30 million. The money didn't just have a profound impact on his life and the lives of his family and friends, but did becoming a Mega Millions jackpot winner also cost him his life? This is Forensic Tales, episode number 35, The Florida Lotto Murder. Welcome to Forensic Tales. I'm your host, Courtney Fretwell. Forensic Tales is a weekly true crime podcast that discusses real, bone-chilling true crime stories and how forensic science has been used in the case. Some cases have been solved through cutting-edge forensic techniques, while other cases remain unsolved. If you're interested in supporting my show and getting access to exclusive content and bonus material, consider visiting our Patreon page, patreon.com/forensictales. I want to give a huge shout out to this week's new patron of the show, Amanda M. Thank you so much for supporting the show, Amanda. You rock. Every contribution, big or small, helps me to continue to produce the true crime content you love. Please consider supporting my show on Patreon. Now, let's talk about this week's case, the Florida Lotto Murder. Hi, Forensic Tales listeners. It's been a huge week in true crime news since our last episode together. And that's because there's been updates on two major cases. Now, one case that I covered early on the show, and then another about a case that I covered in a bonus episode that is only available on the show's Patreon page. The first case is that of the Golden State Killer, now known as Joseph James DeAngelo, has finally been sentenced. And this is over 40 years since his first crime spree began in California. Now, if you haven't listened to the episode on GSK, or if you're not familiar with DeAngelo, this man is believed to have murdered at least 13 people, raped over 50 women, and burglarized over 120 homes all up and down the California coast. And just this past week, in fact, just a couple days ago, GSK was sentenced to 12 life sentences plus 8 additional years behind bars. Now, you might be wondering, how did this monster escape the death penalty? But a part of the deal with his plea bargain with the prosecutors was that he would admit to certain murders and certain rapes in order to avoid the death penalty. Now, another huge update in the true crime world this past week is in the Scott Peterson case. Now, we all remember Scott Peterson was found guilty of murdering his then 8-month pregnant wife, Lacey Peterson, and their unborn son back in 2002. So I covered the Scott Peterson case in a bonus episode that is only available on our Patreon page, which is still available for download right now. If you want to check out and listen to my thoughts and opinions on the Golden State Killer case and listen to what happened this week on the Scott Peterson case, make sure you become a patron of the show at patreon.com/forensictales, and you'll get instant access to my thoughts and opinions on both of these cases. The case we've got this week is another wild and crazy story out of the state of Florida. It's a murder case where the victim just won $30 million after purchasing a lotto ticket. And one of the biggest reasons I wanted to cover it on the show, because it involves a type of forensics that we haven't yet covered on Forensic Tales, and that's the use of forensic accounting. So let's do it. Let's just jump right into this one. The story begins on November 15th, 2006, in the city of Frost Proof, Florida. And yes, before you ask, that is the city's real name. So on that day in November, 40-year-old Abraham Lee Shakespeare and a coworker of his, Michael Ford, were traveling towards Miami, Florida, when the two men stopped for cigarettes and some drinks at a local convenience store. Abraham Shakespeare, born April 24, 1966, in Lakeland, Florida, worked as a truck driver's assistant, making just about $8 an hour. So his life up until November 2006 wasn't perfect. He spent most of his childhood in different homes for juvenile delinquents. And then as an adult, he had a pretty lengthy criminal record. He'd been arrested for loitering on several occasions, driving when he wasn't supposed to be. He stole, he got into fights with people. And then when he had two children with two different women, he got in trouble for not paying child support for either of his young children. Abraham was even sent to prison on two separate occasions. So, not exactly your most upstanding citizen. On November 15th, 2006, Abraham was working as a truck driver's assistant with a guy named Michael Ford. He was assigned to ride shotgun with Ford on an overnight food route to Miami. Along the route, they made a delivery in Lakeland, where Abraham grew up. They made a second delivery in Winter Haven. And then the two stopped at the Town Star Mini Mart in the city of Frost Proof. Michael Ford got out of the truck and he turns around and asks Abraham if he wants anything from inside. Now, I just want to point out here that on this particular day, Abraham had only $5 in his wallet. And knowing that he only has $5, Abraham asked for a pair of Quick Pick lotto tickets, leaving just $3 in his pocket for the rest of this overnight food trip. So Ford went into the store, he purchased some cigarettes, some drinks, and he picked out two Quick Picks for Abraham. Now, like most people, myself included, even though I've probably have played the lotto maybe 5 times in my life, Four didn't select his own numbers for the tickets. He just opted for the random numbers that they give you. So Ford walked out with a ticket with the numbers 6, 12, 13, 34, 42, and 52. Well, a few days later, the ticket with numbers 6, 12, 13, 34, 42, and 52. The same exact numbers on Abraham's ticket were the winning numbers. Abraham Shakespeare just won a $31 million jackpot. He went from $5 in his pocket to now becoming a multimillionaire. Abraham opted to take the lump sum option for $16.9 million, which after taxes left around $11 million and some change. Which, don't get me wrong, is a huge amount of money. He went from essentially broke, $5 to his name practically, hustling for $8 an hour. Now he's walked away with over $11 million. But it wasn't that simple after that. I mean, otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it on the show. More money, more problems, right? Shortly after receiving the lump sum, the Florida courts took the back child support from Abraham's 2 children, which at the time totaled about $9,000. He then gave $1 million to his stepfather. He gave $250,000 each to his 3 stepsisters. He paid off $185,000 on a mortgage for a friend of his. He bought a $125,000 house that he decided that he would just use as a rental property. He gave his brother's son's best friend $40,000. And the list goes on. So I think you get the idea. Abraham really started to burn through a lot of the money really, really quickly here. A rather sad truth about ordinary people who win the lottery, especially big jackpots like this, people start to take advantage of you. All of a sudden, you've got family and friends and family of friends and neighbors and whoever else come out of the woodworks looking for money. And unfortunately, in Abraham's case, it was pretty well known that people in his life were constantly tugging on him after learning about him coming into this huge amount of money. Another sad truth is that it's not uncommon for people to win the lottery and then find themselves completely broke not too long afterwards. So Abraham purchased another house in January 2007 in the city of Lakeland, the house that he intended on living in for a little over $1 million. 3 months after purchasing the home in April 2007, Abraham was sued by his coworker Michael Ford, the guy he was with when he purchased the winning lotto ticket. So Ford, who was 34 years at the time, said that the winning ticket was actually his, that Abraham stole the lotto ticket from him, and said that it's his money and that he should get whatever was left of it, not Abraham. Ford ended up suing Abraham for the money, and the case went to trial later that year in October. Michael Ford's attorney argued that Abraham was basically a transient and said, quote, if it wasn't for his, meaning Abraham's, criminal record, he kind of didn't exist, end quote. At trial, Abraham brought a trash bag stuffed with hundreds of lotto tickets he said he's purchased over the years. I guess to make the point that buying lotto tickets was something that this man done numerous times over the years. That it's not like this time with Michael Ford was the only time that he's purchased a ticket. He's trying to tell the jury, like, I've bought hundreds, probably thousands of lotto tickets. This isn't uncommon behavior for me. And after only a little over 1 hour of deliberation, the jury ruled that Abraham didn't steal the ticket from Michael Ford and that it's absolutely Abraham's money. But this first court ruling didn't stop the appeal process from dragging on. Michael Ford appealed the initial ruling, still claiming that the winning lotto ticket was his and it was stolen from him. The case was set to be heard for appeal on May 27, 2009. But Abraham didn't show up to the court hearing like he was supposed to. In fact, friends and family of Abraham hadn't seen him or heard from him since April of that year. Once the family learned that he didn't show up to court that day, they became increasingly worried about his whereabouts. It wasn't like him to just not show up or be heard from in over a month. It's like he just vanished. At first, family and friends hoped maybe he took his money, whatever was left at that point, and just wanted to get away. Get away from the lawsuit, get away from everyone under the sun asking him for money. A reward of $5,000 was put out for any information into his disappearance. One of Abraham's friends, by the name of Eddie Dixon, came forward and was quoted to the media by saying, "One thing I know is that that's my best friend. Y'all need to go ask that white woman where that man at." End quote. So the white woman Eddie Dixon was talking about was 37-year-old Dee Dee Moore. Dee Dee Moore lived on the property behind Abraham's. She was married to a man by the name of James Moore and has a son who was born in 1995. When police knocked on her door to find out what she knew about Abraham and where he might be, she actually had a lot to say. Dee Dee told police and reporters that she met Abraham about a year before his disappearance. She said she met him at an annual small business conference in November 2008. Dee Dee supposedly told Abraham that she wanted to write a book about him, about winning the lottery. Now, according to Dee Dee, after the two met, Dee Dee and Abraham launched a business together in February 2009, Abraham Shakespeare LLC, a company that Dee Dee herself was in charge of the firm's money. Barely a week after starting the company, Dee Dee divorced her husband of over 17 years, and she moved into one of Shakespeare's homes that he purchased for himself. Police quickly learned that back in 2001, Dee Dee had been convicted of insurance fraud and was sentenced to a year of probation. In 2001, Dee Dee took her Lincoln Navigator, a car that she was thousands of dollars behind on payments, and parked it in a garage in Pasco County. She had an accomplice tie her up, take her several cities away, and throw her in a ditch. She then caught the attention of a passerby who she told that she was raped at gunpoint by three Hispanic men, that they stole her car, and that they left her in the ditch to die. Well, her story didn't quite add up, and she was found guilty of insurance fraud and falsifying a crime report. Now, We don't always praise a criminal for their brains. When police questioned Dee Dee about where Abraham might be, to their surprise, she knew. She told police that Abraham was basically tired of everyone asking him for money all the time, so she helped him skip town. She said Abraham was falling behind on child support again. He recently had a second child who was born, and he was just so tired of people who kept bugging him for money that he said he no longer had. So she offered to the police that Abraham was either in Texas, he might be in Jamaica, Puerto Rico, Orlando. And at one point during their conversation, she even said that he might be sick in a hospital somewhere. But bottom line, according to Dee Dee, he is away by his own free will, that he doesn't want to be found. The police weren't exactly satisfied with this or sold with Dee Dee's story that Abraham just ran away. But without any solid evidence linking her to his disappearance, they're pretty much forced to let her go and keep investigating into his disappearance. I mean, the guy just won millions of dollars in the lottery. That kind of money just might make someone do something stupid. The police started to do a little digging into the finances between Dee Dee and Abraham. They started to do some forensic accounting work. Forensic accounting is a highly specialized subfield of accounting that combines both accounting and police investigative techniques to try and uncover any type of financial crimes. Remember, police knew that Abraham and Dee Dee had started a business together. She lives in one of the homes that he's purchased, and now he's missing. A forensic accountant uncovered a lot of financial information about Abraham and Dee Dee's relationship. The accountant confirmed that back in January 2009, the ownership of Abraham's home was transferred to American Medical Professionals, the company that Dee Dee created and owned. But it wasn't just Abraham's home that was transferred to Dee Dee's company. Of the $570,000 that Abraham owned by early 2009, more than two-thirds of it was owned and controlled by American Medical Professionals. A forensic search of purchases made by this company revealed even more about where Abraham's money was going. They found that on February 21st, 2009, Dee Dee purchased a 2008 Chevy Corvette for her new boyfriend for a little over $70,000. The car was purchased with a cashier's check from none other than her American Medical Professionals LLC business account, where we already know was made up of two-thirds of Abraham's money. About 2 weeks later, on March 2nd, she purchased a 2009 Hummer for just over $90,000 using the same business account. Now, these purchases were made just a few weeks before Abraham was last seen. Remember, he was supposed to be in court on May 27th, 2009, but friends and family of Abraham hadn't seen or heard from him since April. The results from the forensic accounting work gave police enough reason to go back and question Dee Dee a little bit more about where Abraham might be and exactly why he's gone missing. She had reportedly told three different local reporters that she could prove Abraham was still alive and well, that she could even set up an interview with him. She told reporters that she could arrange for Abraham to even meet up with his mother. Of course, neither of which happened. A search of Abraham's cell phone records revealed that the last activity on his cell phone came from April 6, 2009, right around the time he was last seen or heard from around the Lakeland area of Florida. Several months go by, and still, no one has seen or heard from Abraham. His disappearance just doesn't make sense to those that knew him and were so close to him. Friends of Abraham didn't believe Dee Dee's story that he ran away because he was tired of people asking him for money. One of Abraham's friends, George Massey, recalled that winning the lottery made him go from absolutely nobody to somebody of importance. That Abraham thrived off being able to give people in his life money. That it made him feel important, something that he's never in his life felt before. In early November 2009, police questioned Dee Dee Moore again about Abraham's disappearance. And this is the point where the Polk County Sheriff's Department officially declared Abraham Shakespeare a missing person. They had enough evidence to believe that he didn't just walk away from his life. Police confronted Dee Dee Moore about why Abraham was taken off the Abraham Shakespeare LLC account, the business that they reportedly started together. According to Dee Dee, she said he didn't want his name on his account because he didn't like paying taxes. So, she's saying that he asked her to take his name off his money and leave her the sole account holder. But here's another thing. She couldn't explain to police why Abraham's name was taken off the business account they shared together just days after $1 million had been taken out of the account. Dee Dee also told investigators that the reason why two-thirds of Abraham's assets were moved into her company's account was because she said Abraham told her that he didn't want to pay child support for his two kids, that he didn't want people to have access to his money, that somehow having his money in her bank account would protect him. The following month, in December 2009, Abraham's mother, Elizabeth Walker, received a letter in the mail that claimed to be from her son, Abraham. Inside the letter, he said that he was completely fine, that he was alive and well, and that she shouldn't worry about him. This is now over 8 months since anyone's heard from Abraham. A few weeks later, on December 27th, 2009, Abraham's mother received a phone call from someone also claiming to be Abraham. Elizabeth Walker received this phone call while she was out to eat with Dee Dee Moore herself. But there's a problem here. Elizabeth Walker, Abraham's mom, doesn't really think that the letter or the phone call came from her son. I mean, this is his mother after all. If anyone's going to recognize what Abraham sounds like, it's going to be his mother. The following day, December 28th, Abraham's mom received another phone call from someone claiming to be her son, once again saying that he's alive and well. This time, though, Elizabeth Walker ain't buying it. She contacts the police and tells them that she thinks someone is pretending to be her son. Police traced the phone call from the 28th to a number belonging to a man by the name of Gregory Smith. And when police go to speak with Smith, they're surprised to find out that he's actually a really close friend of Abraham's. So naturally, police want to know, why would Gregory Smith, a close friend of Abraham's, call his mother and pretend to be him? Gregory Smith immediately cooperates with police. He knows he's in big trouble. And what he decides to tell the police is completely shocking. Gregory Smith told police right away that Dee Dee Moore approached him and offered him money to call Elizabeth Walker, Abraham's mother, and pretend to be Abraham. He admitted to police that he was in fact the one who called Abraham's mom, pretending to be her son, on both December 27th and the 28th. Gregory Smith became fully cooperating with law enforcement, who are now pretty convinced that Dee Dee Moore knows a lot more about Abraham's disappearance than she's letting on to. 1 week after the second phone call, Dee Dee contacted Gregory Smith again in January 2010. This time, though, she doesn't ask him to call and pretend to be Abraham. This time, she asks Smith if he knew anyone who would be willing to admit to police that they were the one responsible for murdering Abraham Shakespeare. Now, because Smith is fully cooperating with law enforcement by this point, they are all over this one. This is exactly what the police needed. The police decided to arrange a meeting between an undercover police officer and Dee Dee Moore. Officer Mike Smith of the Lake Wells Police Department is the one who pretends to be the person who Gregory Smith allegedly contacted to be this person who would agree to take responsibility for Abraham's murder as Dee Dee wanted. Of course, little does Dee Dee know, this person is an undercover cop. At the meeting, Dee Dee offered the undercover cop $50,000 if he would take responsibility for Abraham's death. During their conversation, the undercover cop Smith agreed to do it, but he told Dee Dee that he wanted to know where Abraham was killed, and he wanted to know where his body was buried, which should have been a huge red flag to Dee Dee that something's wrong here. But some criminals aren't the sharpest tools in the shed. 4 days after the meeting, on January 25th, 2010, Dee Dee took the undercover cop and Gregory Smith to a concrete slab in her backyard. She pointed to the concrete slab and handed over the .38 Smith & Wesson revolver she used to shoot and kill Abraham. Fully believing that she was just about to get away with the perfect murder. Immediately after Dee Dee showed the undercover officer the concrete slab that covered where Abraham's body was buried, she was put in handcuffs and placed under arrest for murdering Abraham Shakespeare. The gig was finally up for this woman. While Dee Dee Moore was in custody, a forensics team is called into her property to try and recover Abraham's body. On January 29th, a body was discovered at the Plant City house belonging to Dee Dee, and the body was properly identified as Abraham. In addition to Dee Dee, police also arrested her ex-husband, James Moore. And that's because after questioning and backed up by cell phone records, it's discovered that in April 2009, Dee Dee called her ex-husband and asked him to dig a large hole in her yard. According to James, Dee Dee told him the hole was to bury concrete in trash. James told police that he did, in fact, dig the hole as requested by Dee Dee, and that he was called back 2 hours later to come back and fill in the hole. But according to James, he never saw what was buried in the hole. So James Moore was also arrested, and he was charged with accessory after the fact for Abraham's murder. On February 19th, 2010, Dede Moore was officially charged with first-degree murder for Abraham Shakespeare. Even with the circumstantial evidence, the work from the undercover cop, the forensic accounting, she denied any involvement in the murder, and she entered a plea of not guilty. Well, the jury didn't believe her either. And on December 10th, 2012, she was found guilty of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, with an additional 25 years for possessing a firearm during the commission of a felony. Dede Moore will spend the rest of her life behind bars. This is a case of just pure and utter greed. The motive was simple: money. I think Dede Moore, before she even met Abraham Shakespeare, was a con and a fraud. Before the murder, she already had been convicted of insurance fraud and staged an entire elaborate crime to go with it. I think she wanted to live a life filled with money, nice cars, big homes, but decided that instead of putting in the hard work for that type of lifestyle, she resorted to cold-blooded murder. She met Abraham Shakespeare and just saw dollar signs all over him. I believe she knew she was going to kill Abraham and take his money from the very first time they met at the business convention. It's even possible that Abraham started to catch on to the fact that Dede was stealing money from him and his accounts. So she decided she needed to kill him. She took advantage of a man who was known by his friends and family for sharing his good fortune. And he wasn't greedy. She lied. She befriended him. Then she murdered him. Forensic Tales is a Rockefeller audio production. The show is written and produced by me, Courtney Fretwell. For a small monthly contribution, you can gain access to bonus content and be one of the first to listen to new episodes. Or, if you simply want to support my show, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/forensictales. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Forensic Tales. Leaving us a rating with a review greatly helps support my show. Forensic Tales is a podcast made possible by our Patreon producers, Tony A., Nicole L., William R., Joseph F., David B., and Amanda M. If you'd like to become a producer of this show, head to our Patreon page or email me at courtney@forensictales.com to find out how you can become involved. Please join me next week. We release a new episode every Monday. Until then, remember, not all stories have happy endings.